Concetta, I adore you. Once I heard that Concetta Rosa Maria Franconero, a.k.a. Connie Francis, had given up playing the accordion, I instinctively knew I had to follow in her high-heeled footsteps and do the same. It seemed there was no real future in America for native-born accordion players. Miss Connie, who changed her name shortly after a 1959 appearance on NBC's Ford Star Time, was wise to accept professional direction from those in the business who knew better. As a result, she retired her squeeze box to concentrate on a lucrative pop singing career. Mom, I'm sorry to inform you, but I have to give up the accordion and focus on my acting career, I said one day out of the clear misty blue. I'm tired of compressing and expanding my bellows. But Jimmy, I thought you wanted to become a professional polka player, asked Mama Dita, who had been juggling monthly bills to pay for my weekly lessons at the Modern Music Center. I lied, I countered. You lied? You lied? Is that all you have to say? Yes. Mama Dita was not happy about my decision, but what could a mother do? On the positive side, she didn't have to listen to another musical note being unmercifully strangled due to a premature death by accordion, and that alone should have been worth her recent $400 investment. I have to admit that I enjoyed looking at the accordion. I thought an attractive, even pretty instrument, at least lying in its velvet-lined case like a piece of white, plastic costume jewelry that you wore occasionally across your chest. Only when I lifted the accordion from its coffin-like snap-open case and fastened it across my child's body did I begin to feel its heaviness and the overwhelming responsibility of playing for people who knew immediately that I had no talent for this instrument. Like Miss Francis, I readily accepted my fate and was ready to move on. And even though Connie Francis was no longer an accordion diva, I followed her into the next melodious chapter of her life with a passion equal to, or even perhaps exceeding, her rendition of Mala Famena. Connie influenced me more than any other pop singer in my musically tarnished youth. She took downbeat to a new level and sobbed out songs like no one else. When she was given airplay on the local KDKA radio station, broadcast live from the Pittsburgh area, the radio jock would issue out an advisory. Get your handkerchiefs ready, folks, and be prepared to get misty-eyed with an ex-accordion player, Miss Connie Francis. You could literally go through an entire box of Kleenex while playing any of her LPs from the late 50s and 60s. Her first really big hit, Who's Sorry Now, which rose to the number 4 position on the U.S. pop charts, said it like it was. With this song, she taught all of us how to throw dirt in the faces of those who had hurt us badly. When she belted out, "You had your way, now you must pay," you felt Connie's pain, but at the same time, you could channel your own hurt through those very lyrics. And then, when she lyrically gave it to that poor son of a bitch at the end of the song with that very dramatic, "I'm glad that you're sorry now," you knew right from the get-go that this was just the start of Miss Francis directing our musical journeys here on Earth. There was never any doubt in my mind that Connie Francis would remain America's musical guru for years to come. And it's no exaggeration to suggest that Connie shaped my life with her string of hits. For example, one of her really, really big hits, "Lipstick on Your Collar," seems pretty lame at first. You were gone for quite a while, half an hour or more. You came back and, man, oh man, this is what I saw. "Lipstick on Your Collar" told a tale on you. At first I thought, well, what's the big deal? After all, it was only a half an hour. What could anyone possibly do in 30 minutes that could upset somebody like Miss Connie? And then I realized that lipstick was synonymous for other things, such as necking and the very real possibility of going all the way. I mean, the next thing you knew, Connie might discover lipstick on her man's zipper, and then she might say something even more profound than man, oh man. Connie's next hit brought some balance into my life and made me feel better about myself. Here I was, feeling down and blue for being such a jackass about any number of things, like my relationship with my next-door neighbor Tommy. Miss Francis provided me with a plausible explanation of my innermost feelings. The song that allowed me to pick up the charred and tangled pieces of my life in 1959 was Everybody's Somebody's Fool. As I played this song over and over until Mama Dita said it was getting on her last nerve, I realized that even though I was hanging about with a bunch of preteen losers who kept taunting me with the sissy word until my tears fell, I should stick with them. The lyrics suggested that hurt and pain are only a small part of the game of life. And though you only led me on and hurt me, I couldn't bring myself to say goodbye, underscored my adolescent angst. And the lovely and delicious Connie almost always provided me a full explanation within the context of her lyrics. It was not enough just to keep singing the refrain, "Everybody's somebody's fool." No, she more than suggested a valid reason for being a complete doodlehead with the perfectly succinct line, "Yet, darling, I'd be twice as blue without you." I knew there was a reason I hung around with that group of hurtful peers. I didn't want to gamble on being twice as blue. Finally, it all made sense. In 1960, Connie released Where the Boys Are, and I knew that she was sending me yet another subliminal message about where my life should be headed. Where the boys are, someone waits for me. Where the boys are, my true love would be. Suggested that even in a crowd of a million people, I'd find my Valentine. I didn't know how my parents would respond to the song's suggestion that I climb on top of a very high and precarious steeple to tell the world he's mine, though. In our small conservative town, that might not have been a very prudent thing to do. "Jimmy, you've been playing that song nonstop for hours," Mama Dita remarked, with a subtle suggestion in her voice that she might scream uncontrollably if she heard it one more time. "Connie's the best, Mom, isn't she?" I responded. "I'm not convinced Connie should have been given up the accordion," she said. "She might regret that decision later in her life, but we'll see." "Mom, you can't climb to the highest steeple and tell the world he's yours with an accordion loosely hung on your svelte body." In 1962, just when I found myself wavering in my personal dating convictions, Connie sent me another pop musical message about boys through the airwaves. Even though I thought that at 24 she should be gravitating to men, I figured she was just one of those people who liked to hang out with younger guys, so it wasn't any big deal to me. "I'll follow the boys wherever they go. Wherever he goes, I'll be right by his side." Jumped out at me at just the right time in my life to push me into the path that I was destined to take. You know, I owe so much of my success in life, as well as on the streets, to Miss Connie Francis. Without her lyrical guidance, I would have been lost in a sea of ambiguity, not knowing what to do when I found myself with the boys. Without her musical direction, my life might have been as bland and limited as a one-note oompa and a polka medley.